Welcome to Paranormal the New Normal. This week, I am very excited to have Eleanor Wagner on my show from Eleanor Wagner's, and I'm going to mess this up, but creepy, and I'm going to let her finish it because she can tell you about herself better than I can tell you about her. Eleanor, how are you doing tonight?
Hi, world. How are you? Thank you for having me here. I'm Eleanor Wagner. I am an author first. I've written 4 books. One a paranormal romance, but 3 that are true account hauntings in the Sussex County, New Jersey area where I live, and the Warren County right beside us. And that's how I started my podcasts, which are Eleanor Wagner's Strange and Scary World, which is out of the Paranormal UK radio network. And then there's Eleanor Wagner's Creepin' It Real on the Coast to Coast Network Live. I do have a paranormal team, which I founded in 2019, and they are called the Lady Ghostbusters. And that is where I get a lot of the stories from, chapters in my books.
I love that name, by the way. I heard that in another podcast you're on, and I do love that name for a team. It's perfect.
Thank you. It just came and it stuck. But I do have men on my team, believe it or not, Jeremy. I have a lot of men who just consider themselves paranormal investigators with the Lady Ghostbusters. So it works.
And I've actually heard of that team before. I don't know where, but I know I've heard it before. I looked into your life a little bit. I know I heard that term. I don't know where, but is Melissa McCarthy on your team or no?
Melissa McCarthy, no. Maybe she says we're a team of Lady Ghostbusters because I did a lot of research to find out if anybody else had that team.
Well,
and then I ended up trademarking the name. So,
That was an offhand joke to the actress who was in the all-female Ghostbusters movie.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, she's not on my team. I wish she was. I would love to have her be a part of it, but no.
Yeah, it'd be entertaining, that's for sure. The thing I wonder the most is, though, if you're based in New Jersey, how'd you get on a UK network?
I happen to know a gentleman. Well, you meet a lot of people in the paranormal industry. One reaches out to another, refers you to another. And a friend of mine had actually planted the seed about starting a podcast. She said, you know, you should really have a podcast. And it kind of stuck because I do have audiobooks from my books and I do have narrators who do the books. And I said, you know what, I should find out if I become a podcaster and I have my own equipment, can I do the own narrating on my books? Because I know a lot of people like to listen to the author read their own book. And so it kind of went hand in hand. And I was like, you know what? What the heck? I'll do it. So I talked to this gentleman that I had been speaking to about other different things. And he said, oh, I'll help you get your equipment and everything that you need in order. And I'm like, cool, great. So he really talked me through everything and got me from soup to nuts started. And then he had mentioned something in a comment. He said, you know, my network is always looking for another show. And it kind of was like, Well, I said, Mark, who can I pitch my idea to? And he goes, me, I own 50% of the company. So I was like, wow, okay. So I did, I pitched my idea and he loved it. And so that's how I got on Paranormal UK. And it's been a great experience and I never expected to be hit up by another network, but they asked if I had ever thought about doing a live show, which is extremely difficult because with Paranormal UK, it's pre-recorded, which has its advantages and disadvantages. I mean, I love the pre-recorded aspect because I can prep and I can cut out anything that's a mistake and cut down out all that background noise and what have you. But that takes me like 6 hours to edit one episode. So that's the part that really drives me nuts. But with the live, I mean, you have to really have your shit in order and then know that it's going to have glitches and things are going to happen. And you kind of have to sweep it under the rug and say, okay, next time I'll be better at it. And that's exactly, you know, where I'm at. I mean, we have our issues when I do a show and the techie guy and I are really working to get those glitches out. But for me, if the content is enough for the people to come and listen and they're liking what we put out and what they're watching, because obviously it's live, they can watch. And so we put paranormal clips and photos and audio footage and stuff. That's the kind of stuff that you want for them to be interested in. And if it's bringing them back and they don't mind the nonsense that might happen while the show is on, until we get all those ducks in order, I just keep on moving face forward.
Yeah, the live network you're on, they don't have a show called WT Freak Live, do they?
I'm sorry, I don't know. I know that they deal specifically in sports, a lot of sports.
Okay.
Which I thought was strange that they had said, well, we're looking for a paranormal show and we don't have one. So I'm sure that they have other shows and other genres, but I'm just not aware of them because I always see wrestling and some sort of other.
Okay.
Sport. When I checked in last to see how they felt about the show so far, because we're only going into program four. And he said, no, it's being well received and they're loving what I'm doing and they want me to keep at it. So that's what I'll do.
Yeah. The only reason I asked is I actually auditioned on a live show called WT Freak Live. It's a paranormal type show. And unfortunately, I didn't get the gig. But why don't you tell us about some of your paranormal experiences? Pick whichever ones you like. I have no preference.
Sure. I've been sensitive as a child and I grew up in the Bronx in Throgs Neck in New York. And I lived with a ghost in the house that I grew up in. And I was a real small child at the time and really didn't know exactly what was going on and was afraid of it. And had a mom who just kind of poo-pooed it and said, oh, it's just a dream. And so that's how I dealt with it. It was a dream that I had to just kind of deal with. And obviously now that I'm an adult, I know that it was a spirit that was just trying to get my attention because he knew that I could see him. And if I could go back to that home today and tell him I was sorry, I would. But obviously there's nothing I can do about that. So that was the first indication that I had some sort of ability. And then as I was going through childhood, I would have premonitions of different sorts. And it was kind of like inconsequential things until something that was pretty scary ended up happening. And when I had the first dream about it, I told mom, and again, she said, it was just a nightmare. Don't worry about it. And then it came true. I was about 11 or 12 when that happened and scared the bejesus out of me because here I knew something was going to happen. And at that age, I kind of blamed myself because I felt like it was something that I could have prevented and done something about. But obviously now as an adult, I know that's not true, but you're talking to a young kid who was feeling that at the time. And so I kind of shut down everything that I had been experiencing after that. And then it wasn't until I was 30 when I had this reawakening moment the day my dad died. He ended up coming to me and letting me know that he was okay. I was on my way to the Bronx to be with him in the hospital and was in bumper-to-bumper traffic on the GW Bridge when I saw this movie screen open up in front of my eyes and this full-fledged movie ended up unfolding. Obviously, it was just minutes long, but it felt like it was an entire movie that I watched. And by the time it was over, I knew that my dad was gone and that he was okay. And then I knew, okay, I definitely got something going on and I need to embrace it and go with it and try and learn more about it and what I'm supposed to do with it. And so from that point on, I was not afraid of receiving messages and believing, because obviously some people will knock you down and say, oh, that's bullshit. You know, there's no such thing, but I'm not out to convince anybody. I'm who I am. It happens to me. I know it does. If you don't believe it, I really don't care. All I have to care is about what I know. And that's all that matters. And then the rest is history. I just knew I had this ability. I've been learning about it ever since. But as far as the writing is concerned, I've always been a writer and I've always been fascinated with the paranormal and ghosts and horror and things of that sort. So when I went to writing, even though I went to school to write for children, believe it or not, and I do have a children's series in the makes, I ended up really steering my attention towards horror and paranormal. And when I wrote my first book, which is called Dream a Little Dream, it really is along the lines of a Stephen King, Dean Koontz saga. It's one of those scary things that has a romantic edge that keeps you on the edge of your seat. And I was in the midst of writing my second one when I got distracted and took an entirely different direction and decided to write my story and the haunting stories of other people in the community where I live. So when this idea came up, I said, you know, I know Sussex County where I live is haunted because at the time I had owned an antique shop, consignment shop that was haunted, and I shared the building with a ghost. And I thought, well, I know this building's haunted, so I know there's going to be plenty of other buildings and properties in the area that are haunted. I wonder if there's anybody else out there that would like to share their story with me. So social media, the wonderful platform that it is.
Yes.
I used it to reach out to the public and said, hey, I'm an author. I'm writing this book. Do you have a haunting story in this area that you'd like to share? And when I made that post, my phone did not stop for weeks. People just kept coming through with their stories. And I just kept writing them down. And it didn't just happen for Sussex County. I was getting stories for Warren County and Morris County and Pike County and Passaic County. And those are all counties surrounding where I live. And I thought, well, I'm going to start accumulating these stories because eventually I'm going to get enough that's going to create a book. And so that's where my Warren County Hauntings book came in last October, because I had so many stories for that area. I thought I'd write an edition for them. And that came out this past Halloween. So I have Sussex County Hauntings and Other Strange Phenomena 1 and 2. 2 came out during COVID because I had so much time on my hands.
Of course.
And then Warren County Hauntings and Other Strange Phenomena, which came out last Halloween. I added the Other Strange Phenomena category because when I was writing that first book in 2019, people in the area were sending me the stories about Bigfoot and UFO sightings. And though they're not necessarily ghost stories or hauntings, they're still paranormal. And so I thought, well, I'm going to add chapters called Other Strange Phenomena so I can put these great stories into the book. And it worked out to my benefit because I've done that with every other book since. And it's opened up a world of opportunities for me. Like, for example, in the second book, I wrote about people's accounts of when they're with their loved ones at their time of death, which are very poignant stories. And then I wrote about people's stories when they get visits from their deceased loved ones. Amazing stories. When I was writing Warren County Hauntings, I wrote about near-death experiences, because when people die for several minutes, you wonder what they've experienced and what happens to them when they come back. Incredible stories. And so now with the book that I'm writing now, Sussex County Hauntings Part 3, I'm writing about reincarnation. And I've done extensive research on it, and I'm just really, really a sponge for this shit and loving every minute of it, and can't wait to put it out in the book when it comes out.
Yeah, I mean, well, I was going to say, if you're in New Jersey and you're not talking about Bigfoot, then there's something missing there, because New Jersey is a huge, I first and foremost am a Bigfoot lover. I mean, well, put it this way. Growing up, I was scared shitless of horror movies and stuff like that. Like, I avoided it like the plague. And but I loved, even when I was in elementary school, going to the school library and taking out books on cryptids and like Bigfoot, Yeti, because at that time they weren't really combined into one category. They were just still separate entities, and just all the other ones as well. I mean, Loch Ness Monster. I mean, all the ones that they knew about in the 90s that were big. I mean, now that list has grown exponentially with internet.
Yeah.
I mean, and well, first question I got is, and I'm definitely bringing this up later during Creature Feature, but any stories about the Jersey Devil in there since you're in Jersey?
No, believe it or not. And it's not for lack of trying. It's just that people have not come out of the woodwork to tell me about them. I know I live right by High Point State Park, which is very active as far as Bigfoot is concerned. And the pines are essentially the place that I know the New Jersey Devil has been sighted, but I've left it open for anybody who wanted to share, and nobody has. So whenever I do make those posts, I update them. I kind of say, okay, now I'm on 3 and I'm working on this, that, and the other thing. Do you have anything you want to share that's going to fit into these chapters? And then people start telling me. And of course, you always have those random people that say, no, I don't have anything about this, but I do have a story about blah, blah, blah. And so essentially I'll write it down and put it into whatever folder it suits. But I still have not gotten anything on the New Jersey Devil or Hooker Man. Hooker Man seems to be another ghost that people have heard about a lot. I mean, other than just like, oh, I was on the railroad tracks and I saw a light. You know, that to me is, sure, that's Hooker Man, but it's not that interesting to me. The stories that I write have something that happens that's going to be like an eye opener, and your mouth is going to be dropping like, wow, that's so cool.
Exactly.
So, you know, if you've been on the tracks at night and you just were walking randomly and all of a sudden this light appeared and you try tracing it down and it disappeared, it's still not enough for me to say,
oh,
it's something you're talking about.
Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. I just realized what you're talking about. And like, you're talking about like ghost lights or orbs or one of the thousand, yeah, other thousand.
There's this story about this guy, Hooker Man, who supposedly was a railroad employee who lost his limb on the tracks. And when he died, he still walks the tracks. And people have known to see his lantern at night while they're walking along the tracks.
Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, I need something more substantial than that.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that sounds more like an urban legend than an actual ghost encounter. You know,
it's been recorded so many times. I know that Weird New Jersey has written about it. So I really don't want to waste any paper on saying the same thing that they've said. I like to try and tell stories that people have not heard about yet or in addition to. So if somebody has already written about, say, the captain's house in Vernon, that's great. But now I'm going to tell you about what I've heard about it. And so I'll bring new stories to the forum that have not been written about yet. So it's okay to write about something that's already been written about, say the Vernon Inn, everyone keeps on asking me that. Why haven't you written about the Vernon Inn? Because nobody's told me anything yet. And now I'm on book three. And it's, like I said, it's not for lack of trying. I mean, I tried and tried. I'm like, please, I even talked to the original owner. Please tell me about it. And nothing. So it wasn't until recently when I've been working on three, I've been working on the story about the Daily Bean, which is the old cider mill house in Vernon, and people have been coming out. I've got such great stories. My paranormal team did an investigation in there. We had some great stuff happen. And so now I just want to build upon what I have, and people are telling me about it. And so, of course, that story is going to be a chapter in the book. And out of that, people have said, well, what about the Vernon Inn? I'm like, well, do you have something to tell me? So I've gotten like a little tidbit of stuff, and I'll hold on to it and go with it when it becomes more, but I want my chapters to be full of interesting things aside from the history, because people love the history and they love the pictures that I put in there, because I do put pictures of the buildings and post on my website any kind of audio or video that we unearth. But I still want to fill those chapters with stories that are going to entertain, that happened to people. And so I do have a few now of the Vernon Inn, but it's still a story in the making.
Yeah, I completely get what you're saying, because it's like when I started this podcast, I basically put out posts looking for people who are able to give me different topics. And yes, I do have someone coming on this podcast who is a hunter of the Loch Ness Monster, which I cannot wait for that one, because I've been obsessed with Loch Ness since I was a child. But
may I ask you how old you are, Jeremy?
I will be 34 next week.
Okay, well, I'm 57, and I grew up with this show called In Search Of, with Leonard Nimoy was the narrator.
I've seen them all.
I remember growing up with that original Bigfoot picture and the Loch Ness Monster. And I remember being so fascinated and excited about it. So I know where you're coming from. Like, I know if you grew up with that, I know exactly what you're talking about, because that's where I was when I was a kid. And so, yeah, I'll be listening for that show. I'd love to hear what he has to say.
I
would love to hear what she has to say. Cool.
Yeah, and I'm still trying to lock down a date with her. We've talked back and forth. I'm still trying to lock down a date, and unfortunately now she's not going to get locked in until at least August, because I am booked out till August. But
oh, good for you.
Oh, it's a great thing. But I mean, I'm trying to find variety. That's the thing. I mean, I would love to find someone who actually has had like Bigfoot encounters for years and can talk about it.
I'll connect you with somebody that has.
Beautiful.
So when we're done here, just remind me and I'll connect you with two people.
Okay. Yeah. I talk a lot on this show about, I used to think it was, I keep getting the website wrong, but I actually posted in the show notes for last episode because I was telling Glenn about it, and it's called called North American Dogman Project.
Oh, okay. All right.
And I'm in the process of trying to reach out to them to get a couple of the founders of the website to come on and talk about experience that they had to help them start this site, which for my listeners is called North American Dogmen Project. And that's the name of the website, NADP. And because I kept saying it was like dogmensightings.com or something like that. And I had a feeling I was wrong. So I finally Googled it again because I haven't looked at it in a few years. And I mean, I love dogmen's one of my favorite cryptids. I mean, I don't know if you've heard of Monsters Among Us podcast.
No.
It's a podcast by a man who lives out in California now, originally from Ohio, named Derek Hayes. And it's basically a call-in podcast where people call in their stories and he just plays their stories and comments on them. And it's a great show. It's been on for 7-8 years now. Amazing show. And that's one of the things that he features a lot of dogmen calls on that show. And ever since I started hearing about them, because before I heard the name dogmen, I only knew the term werewolves, which I don't like, because werewolves makes you think of the old classic movies and legends of, oh, it has to be a full moon. Oh, silver can kill them. With dogmen, none of that's necessarily true. No one really knows what their abilities are, which, I mean, I always bring these two up. I mean, the Beast of Bray Road fascinates me to no end. And the Beast of the Land Between the Lakes in Michigan fascinates me to no end, because that one is gruesome and bloody, a lot of those stories about that one. And it's just interesting. I mean, I almost want to go to Michigan to try to go see the Land Between the Lakes, but pardon me.
You should have a pilgrimage and do that. You should, especially if you're in this field. You'd probably love it.
I would love it, but I would also never want to be outside there at night just because of the stories I've heard. I mean, there are actual police records.
No fear. You have to have no fear.
But like I said, I was never into horror as a kid, so I do have fear. I just started for my other podcast. We just did a halfway to Halloween horror comedy and horror franchise bracket. So I watched a bunch of movies that I refused to watch as a kid because I was so scared of them, like Gremlins. I never watched Gremlins because I thought it would scare me.
Oh my gosh, that's like one of my all-time favorites.
I love that movie. Now that I watched it, I realize it's a comedy more than a freaking like scary movie. But
they are pretty creepy. But my puppy, that's my puppy. If you can see him, his name is Gizmo. Because he looks like Gizmo.
Kind of, yeah, I could see the resemblance.
My daughters used to like mess with him all the time, put like the soundtrack for Gizmo and make videos of him kind of acting like Gizmo. Of course, the good Gizmo, not the bad version of the Gremlins, but so yeah, we've been watching that movie since they were kids.
Yeah, see, neither of my parents were ever really horror fans, so that's part of the reason I never got into it. It's all about if your parents are fans or not. Like my step.
You ask my kids, what movie do you remember most from when you were kids? And they'll say Stephen King's It. before the movie came out, what, a couple of years ago? What time was it? When was it?
The first one came out in 2017. The second one came out in 2019.
Okay, but before that, long ago.
The 1990 miniseries with Tim Curry, yeah.
There you go. I recorded it on video and we watched it. And they were so addicted. It was like we watched it all the time. We had company over the house. We watched the miniseries. And so they grew up terrified of Pennywise. But here's a fun tidbit of information. I was a children's party clown for over 30 years. And because of my affiliation and obsession with Stephen King and It, My clown was called Penny Whistle, not Pennywise, because I was a good clown. I was a children's party clown. So my kids weren't afraid of Penny Whistle, but they were terrified of Pennywise. So,
see, the funny thing is, my stepkids nowadays, the youngest is turning 5 on Saturday, and the oldest just turned 8 last month. And their mother is a huge horror fan. So when the new It came out in 2017, she watched it, and the older one was in the room. They were both in the room at the time. The younger one was a baby, so she really didn't see it because she wasn't really watching the TV like that. But the older one saw it, so that became a scare tactic for years for him whenever we wanted him to do something or listen to us. Pennywise is coming, and I even would...
Terrible! That's terrible.
Hey, these days as a parent, you got to use what you can use.
I'm actually going to do this,
and I can't believe I'm doing this on my show, but hiya, Jerry. I'm downstairs looking for you. Like, that's my Pennywise voice, and I would use it constantly, and it would scare the crap out of them.
Jeremy, down here, everybody floats.
Oh, trust me. Trust me, after I saw the first It movie, I didn't see the first one. I did see the first one in theaters. Yeah, after I saw the first new one in theaters, which, first of all, this is the first, like, real scary movie I've seen in a theater ever, because I just wanted to see it because it's a Stephen King book and I love Stephen King. Mm-hmm. And so the whole way driving home from the theater, I'm looking in my back seat constantly thinking Pennywise is going to pop out my back seat or something, or that he was following me home. And this is 2017. So I'm 29 at this point.
Kudos to Tim Curry. He's the man.
Oh, no, this was the new one with.
I know, but he was good, too. That was Alexander Skarsgård's brother who played the one in the new one. But
Bill Skarsgård, yeah.
Tim Curry was just the bomb.
I've seen the original, too. And I gotta say, the new one's
It's creepier. It's creepier, but. You know, he had big shoes to step in.
Yes, he did. Sure. Yes, he did. Because Tim Curry's a legend. I love him in a lot of things he's done. But it's also the time. I mean, it's just upgrade. It's updated graphics, updated everything they can do. Everything they could do nowadays in movies.
And just so you know, Tim Curry's version of Pennywise is really Stephen King's depiction of Pennywise. The new version of Pennywise is not what's written in the book.
Oh, seeing that movie in 2017 is what made me start reading Stephen King books in chronological order.
What'd you start with?
Carrie, of course.
Okay, yeah, that was my first one too. And now you've read a lot of them?
I did for years, and then I recently moved into a house with my girlfriend and her kids. And since then, my time I have to read things has gone down dramatically.
Did you read The Shining?
Yes. I mean, I read
Haunted. So you read The Haunted Hotel. Did you see the movie?
The original Jack Nicholson one, of course.
Yeah. Okay. Were you as pissed off as I was about it?
Oh God. It is literally a theme to watch movies based on Stephen King books and be pissed off because they don't follow everything in the book.
No, never mind that. They used a name and made up a story because in The Shining, the main thing about The Shining is the boiler. Everybody has to think about the boiler and boiler and its timing because that's the main thing about the book, okay? But they killed off the hero in the movie. It's like, how could you kill off the hero? He saves the day. And that really pissed me off. So when I walked out of that movie and I'm going, you have Jack Nicholson in this movie and you've F it up like you did. Like, I was so pissed. And so apparently with Stephen King, because he later went on to create his miniseries and did it just like he wrote it. And that in itself was, definitely something that I waited for and was thrilled to watch, because when everybody tells me, oh, I love The Shining, I'm like, bullshit. It's nothing like the book.
Oh, God, no. God, no.
Yeah. But if you ask me, like, what's your favorite Stephen King books? My favorite book is The Stand. Stand comes first. Mm-hmm. And then I have, I do like The Shining. And then there is a few others that fall right down in line. But I've always been, he was one I grew up with.
The Stand is definitely in my top 5 of his books. I read that as well. I love that book. I haven't finished the new miniseries they did on CBS All Access yet. And I
new.
It was, it came out last year, I believe, with CBS All Access did a new miniseries of The Stand with
Whoopi Goldberg was in it, right? Yeah, I didn't watch it because she was in it. I was pissed off at her.
This is before the whole Whoopi Goldberg thing happened, but
no, but I just no, I haven't liked her ever since she's been on The View. She sucks. She's just a lying. Yeah, but anyway, I watched the original one that came out in the 90s.
The Rob Lowe one, yeah.
And it was excellent. Excellent. And
trying to find a place to watch that nowadays is hard.
Yeah, I imagine so. I had it on video, but I don't have a VCR anymore, so I can't watch it.
Yeah. I mean, because the new one actually has one of the Skarsgård brothers in it, because apparently for everything Stephen King now, there has to be a Skarsgård brother in it.
Oh, really?
And I will tell you this, though. Whoopi Goldberg, I mean, you know what role she plays, I assume. Because, I mean, of her age.
She's not old enough either.
But she also, it's a very, very small role. And she is on screen very little for the episodes I did see so far. So, just so you know, I mean, you definitely should watch it. From what I've seen, it's an amazing one. The Dark Man, I forget who plays him, but he plays him perfectly. Like, he matches up with the book so perfectly.
Really?
It's just...
That book is just so good. Oh, my gosh. Love that.
All right. The Stand is one of my favorites. Salem's Lot is definitely one of my favorites because I read that as well.
Oh, yeah, Salem's Lot for sure. Did you ever see the miniseries for that one?
Which one?
David Soul was in it. And
The original movie. Yeah.
The original. It was a miniseries on TV. He was in it with, he was a young heartthrob. I can't think of his name right now.
Hasselhoff, was it?
No. No, what the heck was
it? I can see it. It was David.
Lance Kerwin. And I was actually on a podcast not too long ago and we were talking about the Black Eyed Kids. Have you ever heard of the Black Eyed Kids and the story about them?
Okay. One, you just gave me an idea to add to my creature feature list, but I do love the Black Eyed Kids stories.
Really interesting. And he was explaining how they kind of like hypnotize you, and the guest that I had on the show was describing it was really the same way I thought of those vampires in Salem's Lot were. And I kept thinking of Michael Glick in the window, scratching on the window with his nails, trying to get his mom's attention. Mom, let me in. And then all of a sudden you see his incisors and his mother. She's so hypnotized because she lost her kid. She's like, Michael. And she opens up the damn window for this vampire to come in. And next thing you know, she's bitten and the rest is history. But just that whole thing of in the window scaring the bejesus out of the viewer just made me think of the Black Eyed Kids, because they're supposedly really so hypnotic.
It's that
feeling.
It's funny because one of my favorite rappers actually does a song called Black Eyed Kids, and the course of the rap is like, let us in, let us in. And it's perfect. And like, I knew a Black Eyed Kids before I started listening to it, before the song came out even, but it just was like,
2016 they made a movie about it. I wonder if his song was the soundtrack for it, because they made a movie called Black Eyed Kids.
Really? Ironically. I never heard of that.
Yeah.
Must not been like an A movie or something.
Said it was pretty decent, he said. But he also said there's, believe it or not, a comic book, a Black Eyed Kids comic book out.
I've heard of that one.
I didn't know that.
I haven't had a chance to read it, but I've heard of it. And but yeah, the other thing, with Salem's Lot, they actually did the second season, I believe, of Castle Rock. It was what took place in Jerusalem's Lot. They renamed the town. And it's supposed to take place after Salem's Lot, the book, and it's basically a new wave of evil coming into the town.
And it's called, you said, Castle Rock?
It's a show on Hulu. It's called Castle Rock. They did three They did three seasons, two or three seasons of it. The first season takes place in, I think, Derry, actually.
Oh, okay.
And it's not what you think. Trust me, I wish. But it was right around the same time that it came out, so they wouldn't cross over like that.
Did you ever see the movie The Mist?
I have not seen the original movie. I saw the TV show they did a couple years ago, a new version of it. And I read his short story, The Mist.
You gotta see the movie. The movie is really good. And then Stand By Me. Have you ever seen Stand By Me?
I did see Stand By Me because I read the short story and I wanted to see the movie that actually went to it.
A lot of people don't know that Stephen King. And The Green Mile, that's Stephen King too. A lot of people don't know that.
Stephen King, I said on the show before, Stephen King is just one of the greatest writers ever to come out of this world.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the third one I was going to say that I freaking love? I mean, well, they're never going to do it.
Firestarter. They just releasing Firestarter. Yes.
I haven't watched it yet, but I saw it the other day on Paramount Plus or Peacock, whatever it's on. I saw the banner for it, and I'm like, I told my girlfriend, I'm like, oh, once the kids go to bed one night, we're gonna watch this definitely. I read the book Firestarter, and I love the Nicole Kidman movie too, but I'd like to see an updated version of it, kind of, because they didn't follow the book exactly.
The original Firestarter has what's her name in it?
I always get Nicole Kidman and Drew Barrymore mixed up. I don't know why. It's just one of those things. Like, I love Moulin Rouge, and I'll talk about it and be like, "Oh, that's Drew Barrymore," and they'll be like, "No, that's Nicole Kidman." And I'm like, "Oh, god damn it, again."
That's the one you were talking about. I thought there was something that I missed, but
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about. But Stephen King books are just amazing. But you can't watch the movies without or the TV shows without preparing to be disappointed to some degree.
Mm.
I mean, but they are making a new Salem's Lot. I believe it's a miniseries again, or it might be a movie. I know something's coming out with that in the next year.
I just remember being very pleased with that miniseries, loving David Soule in the part, loving Lance Kerwin, just really being happy with the characters, the way they filled them and portrayed them.
I liked it, but I mean, the person who played the main vampire, I can't think of his name right now for some reason. David Soule said, like, He wouldn't listen to the director. He, at the end of the movie, he gives like his whole little speech about like being the last cowboy and something like that. And it's so off book of the character that it's just like, come on. Like, I want to, the speech he gives in the book about when he tells the Reverend, I remember when your kind were pinning fish on their chest and hiding in caves. Like, that speech, they need to put that in a movie, because that speech is perfectly scary.
Yeah, just the whole speech.
Like something that is that old that I can remember back to the BC times. It's terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Oh, trust me, I could do a whole freaking show on. I could do a whole podcast on Stephen King if I really had the time for it, which actually not a bad idea for one day, but I'll work on that. But so, what would you say is the most, I want to say, unique or surprising paranormal experience that ever happened to you?
When my team did an investigation in the Sterling Hill mines. I mean, I've never been on a paranormal investigation that proffered so much activity in one evening, but you have to think about the number of lives that are lost in a mine to begin with. And that, I'm sure, played a part in us having so much activity in just the short 6 hours that we were there as a team. We had residual energy that happened continuously. The mediums were picking up on video memories of the victims that were in these accidents. And then we had intellectual interaction with spirit. In fact, the one specific event that had happened, we were all running our cameras at the same time. And after the event, I took the best footage from that investigation and submitted it to Paranormal Caught on Camera. And they liked it so much, they did a feature of our group on the show.
Oh, if you know Paranormal Caught on Camera, you know Derek Hayes then.
One of the people that gives his impressions of the evidence on the show.
Okay. He has a beard and he's very deep voiced.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is he the one that you're gonna have on
your show? I'm working on that, but he's the podcaster I talked about who does Monsters Among Us.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yes, I am working on having him on my show eventually because I would love to have him in my show. I'm a fanboy of him, basically. So having him in my show would be an honor. Reverend Mark Maskey is going to be in my show in July, and I cannot wait for that because I'm sure you've heard of Small Town Monsters. They're, and Mark Maskey does their podcast a lot. He's the host of their podcast, Monsteropolis, that they do about their movies and just about different topics altogether. And it's just, talking to him is going to be amazing, and I'm hoping he could lead me to Seth Breedlove and other members of the Small Town Monsters group. Heather Mosher, I'd love to talk to her too, but big dreams, you know. I posted on Twitter last week reaching out, just tagging all the people I want to talk to, and the response has been overwhelmingly good.
That's nice.
Yeah, considering this will be my fifth episode, yes, it's amazing. I'm so new. I didn't think any of these people would show me any like respect or care because I thought it'd just be like, oh, talk to us when you're like 100 episodes in.
Do you do weekly or bi-weekly?
I do weekly. I record usually every Monday and I release every Saturday morning.
I've been able to manage the bi-weekly on both of them. But it still is a struggle because, like I said, I have a deadline for the book and I have people that are saying, when is the book coming out? When's the book coming out? So I don't want to disappoint anyone and really need to get moving on that. Thankfully, I work in the school district here in Sussex County. So when school's out in June, I'll be able to dedicate July and August to writing the book more and getting more chapters out so that I can meet my deadline of Halloween again.
You know, it's a synchronicity kind of that you say that, because the third guest I had on this podcast is an author named Brandy Alexander, and she wrote a book earlier this year called Genesis, Paranormal Alliance Destined to Fight Darkness. And I actually read the whole book. It took me a month after my surgery and I read the whole book throughout that month. The reason I say it's a synchronicity is because she's a school teacher too, and she writes her books during the summer, and then during the rest of the year she just promotes them on podcasts and she tries to come up with ideas for the next one. I am in love with her book. When she was on here, I basically fanboyed out of her book, and she actually has a second one coming out soon and a third one that she's working on, and I am looking forward to those books. But just talking about your books, I mean, I'm already ready to go on like eBay or Amazon after this to see if I can find them.
Oh, thank you. Well, they're available on Amazon. They're in ebook form. They're on Audible, audiobook form. You can get them anyway, paperback.
If I go in ebook form, I'll read them, but then my girlfriend won't read them because she hates reading on device. So
there you go. Yeah, I'm a bookbinder kind of person. I like a book with binding. Although I am forced to read ebooks every now and again because I do review other authors' books. So the easiest way to do that is to get an ebook form and read it whenever I have a chance, because you usually have a limited amount of time to do that in. But to me, for enjoyment, I prefer the book with binding. That's me.
I always did too originally, but then I started reading during my breaks at old jobs and stuff. And like, it's hard to have to remember to bring a book with you. If you finish one, like it's hard to remember, like every day for a while, like I would forget a book every day because I just keep forgetting to grab one of my other ones off my shelf. So that's why I finally switched to ebooks, because I always have my cell phone on me. So that's, I'm not going to forget a book then.
There you go.
And it's just, and plus if you want to read outside in the dark at night, like I like to sometimes, and having a regular book is hard to do.
Sure. So it has its advantages and disadvantages, right?
Yeah. I mean, but there's nothing like holding a nice book in your hands and reading. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. But so have you had any experiences with anything that wouldn't be spirits or ghostly, anything more solid, let's say?
I've had a UFO experience. Is that what you're talking about? Something like that?
I was pushing more towards like Bigfoot, but hey, UFO experiences.
I haven't had any Bigfoot experiences, but I have had an experience with UFO.
Well, I'll tell you what, you could break a virginity on the show and you could tell the first UFO experience ever on the show.
Okay, we moved into our development in 2001, and we were one of the only houses in the area at the time. So we were kind of like in oblivion in the country. And I did have one neighbor next to me, and so she and I were friends with each other because we were the only people that were here. And one day when my kids were off at school, in the middle of the day, I'm on the phone with a friend, somebody else, and I'm talking to them, and I'm looking out the window at the time, and all of a sudden they see this object hovering off in the horizon. And I was like, what the heck is that thing? And watched it for several minutes. But I finally said to her, listen, I got to get off the phone with you right now. I need to take care of something. And got off the phone with her and called my neighbor Sue and said, Sue, go to your window and look outside and see if you tell me if you see anything off the horizon. So she looks out her window and she's quiet for a minute. And she goes, I see something, but I can't explain it. And the two of us is just standing there talking on the phone, watching this thing until it took off and went away. Then, probably within the same time frame, my kids are night swimming outside in the back of the pool with their friend, and I'm inside cleaning up the dinner dishes and in the kitchen, and they come running in from outside going, Mom, we just saw a flying saucer. Come on. And so the three of them are grabbing me to go outside to see something that's already gone. So that intuitive mind of mine says, okay, we're going to go inside and I'm going to separate the three of you kids. I'm going to put you in different areas of the downstairs of the house, give you writing tools and paper. And I want each of you to draw me a picture of what you saw. So you're talking, I think the two oldest were 9 at the time. And I think my youngest was like 4, something like that. They all draw their pictures and they hand them to me and they're exactly alike. So for me, they all saw the same thing.
Yes.
You know, so when I was writing the chapter on UFOs in that first book, I kept those pictures that the kids drew when I wrote the story so that people could see the pictures that they drew. When I was asking about UFOs sightings in the area, I got so many people that came out with their stories. So it kind of like coincided with me telling the incident that happened to me and the kids.
Well, actually, funny. Well, since we're talking about UFOs here. My father always said, because he was at a party at one of our family friends' houses in New York. We lived in Kingston, New York, like outside of Kingston, New York. I don't know if you ever heard of it or it's.
I've been to Kingston.
We lived outside of Kingston in a small little town called Tilson. But my dad always said the one night they were at our family friend's house in Kingston, he was in the hot tub with like 3 other people at a party they were having. And yes, there was alcohol involved, I'm sure, but. He always swore me when I was a kid that the 4 of them saw a UFO while sitting in the hot tub that night. And all 4 of them say they saw it. But my mom always said he was full of it because he was drinking that night. But who knows? I mean, he's not alive anymore, so I can't ask him about it.
Unfortunately. You know what? It has to happen to you for you to believe it.
Well, that's actually funny because my current girlfriend, before she moved in with me, she lived on the South Shore of Massachusetts. And was on the edge of what is commonly known as the Bridgewater Triangle. I'm sure you've heard of that phenomenon.
I've heard of the Bermuda Triangle, which I was very fascinated with as a child.
Oh, but you've never heard of the Bridgewater Triangle?
No, I've not.
Oh, well, I always like to give my guests some kind of homework to do. And trust me, you might want to look into it because it could easily be a book topic for you. But basically, I keep saying one day I'm going to do a special on this, but I want to find someone who's from the South Shore of Massachusetts that lives in the Bridgewater Triangle and has had multiple experiences. But basically, the Bridgewater Triangle is land where, of course, Native Americans were slaughtered back in the 1600s, 1500s, what have you. And supposedly, the Native American chief, before he died in the Huckamuck Swamp, he cursed the land. And since then, the Bridgewater Triangle has been a massive array of sightings of Puckwudgies, Bigfoot, UFOs, giant snakes, thunderbirds, just basically anything paranormal, you name it. The Bridgewater Triangle is guaranteed to have some kind of story about it. And, of course, satanic cults, which were very active in there in the 80s and 90s. But my girlfriend's house she lived in was right on the edge of the Bridgewater Triangle. Basically, you walk in the woods behind her house and you're in what they consider the triangle. And the one night, me, her, and the two kids are coming in from outside because it started getting dark. And we're in the back porch of their house, finishing our cigarettes. And all of a sudden, my stepson looks up in the sky. He's like, why are those bunch of stars moving? And we all look up, and there is 7 or 8 star looking from that distance. They look like stars, but they were all moving in the same direction at the same speed and faster than any star could possibly move to the human eye. So to me, that was my first real UFO experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely isn't the last time I saw something like that out there, because the Bridgewater Triangle is known to be highly, highly visited by aliens. I mean, I could, when I do the special episode on it someday, I will be relating a lot of my girlfriend's and her family's stories from living in that house, because that house itself was built on a Native American burial ground. I mean, when I first started dating her, I would tell my family, like, yeah, her house is straight out Poltergeist, basically. But I mean, just everything happens in that house. Shadow people, spirits, just anything you could. When they were kids, they saw giant snakes in the backyard. I mean, it's just everything. The only thing we're missing is a Puckwudgie, which I would love to meet. I would love to run into a Puckwudgie one day. That's my dream. But because I do love those little crazy cryptids, they are. But but yeah, so I mean, that was my UFO. That's my one UFO experience that I ever seen. And my girlfriend swears that she, in that house, she was abducted multiple times. I mean,
oh wow, that's crazy.
I bought her a camera one time for some holiday because she wanted a camera for her room, just to, so when she's out of the room, she can keep an eye on the kids. But basically, in one of the videos she had, the video went like all fuzzy and lights for a second. And then outside of the one window, which it's a second story window, so ain't no animal getting up there, ain't no human getting up there without a ladder, and you would hear that. There's some dark figure, like humanoid shape, but some dark figure that you could see, that she said you could see outside the window on the camera, like just kind of like scurrying by the window really fast. And her and her sisters have heard at night things running around the house in like a circle so fast that no human could run that fast. She said she doesn't even think like a coyote, because they have a lot of coyotes out there, of course. But she says no coyote would ever run that fast around the house. And why would a coyote run in circles around the house?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just doesn't make sense. So
sure.
Someday I will be doing a special episode about that house in particular, because that house right there is hours of stories. And of course, her family doesn't like to talk about it, so I can't have them on. But they like to live in ignorance of, they know it happens, but maybe if we pretend it doesn't happen, it'll stop happening.
Yeah.
Gotta love those people.
Believer, disbelievers.
Basically. But, well, enough from me for now. any other cryptid categories your sightings have fallen into, or is aliens?
Not me personally, no.
Well, that's actually fine, because I think...
Going to show me some kind of creatures or whatever and ask my opinion on them. I don't know if I'm going to know what they are, because cryptid actually is a pretty new name for me too, because I'd never really heard about it until I started my podcast. People started talking to me about them, that they use that terminology for different things.
Well, I will. Yes. And we are going to play a little, game, and it's called, it's a discussion more than a game. I don't show pictures or anything really. I basically just bring up different cryptids and other creatures, and we both discuss our use. You tell me whether you believe in them or not, and if they do exist. You basically can go into as much detail as you want about what you believe about things. And it's just interesting because I've used a couple of the same ones over and over again with different guests, and just the different theories you hear, that some of them I've heard before, of course, and some are completely new theories to me. And I'm just like, wow, that's something to think on for the next week. But since you're from New Jersey, we, of course, are going to start with the Jersey Devil, because that has always been one of my favorite ones that I used to have a hard time believing in until I heard some calls come into Monsters Among Us that are people that have had modern day sightings of it. So,
sure, I believe this.
Now, for those who don't know, because I have heard people who don't know about this, because I think I said to Glenn the Jersey Devil, and he was like, "You mean the hockey team?" But the Jersey Devil is a creature that's supposedly came to Mother Leeds, a woman who lived in the 1700s, I believe, in New Jersey, and it was supposed to be her 13th child she had, which that poor woman, but
right.
But supposedly it was a 13th child, and she said she didn't want it, and that caused it to be cursed. And when she gave birth to it, supposedly it came out deformed, having goat-like features and wings and hoofs. And it supposedly flew out right out the window. And since then, people have been seeing some kind of creature. I mean, I don't know about the origin story. I think that's just a fun urban legend people came up with years ago to tell about it. I mean, I've yet to see documented proof of that happening, but...
Especially since I haven't gotten any stories from people about it.
But I have.
That's not a possibility. I mean, everybody talks about Mothman and say that he exists. So, you know, the Jersey Devil doesn't sound too far off from Mothman.
Well, all right. Well, I'll put a pause in the Mothman thing for a second, because that's a whole nother rabbit hole we can go down in a minute. But, I mean, the Jersey Devil, I mean, yes, it's kind of hard to believe because there's supposed to be only one of these creatures, and yet it's been seen since the 1700s, whenever it first supposed to happen. And according to people, it lives in the, and I'm gonna forget the name right now, the Pine Barrens. It lives in the Pine Barrens. And I have heard stories from people on other podcasts where they hear, supposedly when it's coming, you hear like a train sound coming at you. And I don't know what that's about. That may just been people getting used to trains when they first started in like 1800s. Like that might have been just that, and people being scared. So they said, "Oh, it's the Jersey Devil." I don't know. I mean, that's the problem with a lot of these things, where there's really not proof of them. But I've heard some recent stories on a lot of different varieties of just people that supposedly have seen it in the Pine Barrens when they're out there camping or when they're out there hiking. They see something fly by them really fast, basically, or run by them really fast. And of course, because it's the Pine Barrens, people say it's the Jersey Devil. I mean, on a believability scale, and do I think it exists scale, I'd probably give it a 6 out of 10, and that's being generous. How about you, Eleanor?
I think there's a possibility. There's always a possibility, you know? I mean, Bigfoot's kind of like a far stretch too, but some people say they believe in it, some it doesn't, you know what I mean? So there's a possibility. I have to agree with you. It's probably on a scale from 6 to 10.
Yeah, like well, from there, we can actually jump into what you said about Mothman, because the reason I can believe Mothman exists more than anything else is because Mothman has been sighted in multiple locations around the world.
Yes.
Chernobyl, before the big nuclear fallout. I mean, it was the classic story of it being spotted in Chicago, I want to say, which I'm thinking right. Is it Chicago or Detroit, the original one?
I want to say Detroit.
Maybe. Yeah, I think you are right. But yeah, the TNT fields outside of West Virginia. It's West Virginia.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. How am I not thinking about that? Yeah. It's the TNT fields outside West Virginia and the old army space they used during the Second World War to keep. It's a barracks they used to keep the TNT and dynamite in there.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, and it's in West Virginia. I forget the name of the town right now for some reason, which I got to make better notes of these things, but because it's really embarrassing to forget this type of stuff. When I'm not recording, I can go talk to someone about this and it'll pop in my head in a second. I'll know it. But I mean, yeah. Mothman, I mean, the classic stories in West Virginia of Mothman, the Chernobyl sightings, and there's been other stuff.
I didn't know about the Chernobyl sighting. That's pretty unusual.
There was a Mothman-like creature. Well, back then they didn't call it the Mothman-like creature. They said there was a flying creature that was spotted multiple times in Chernobyl 3 or 4 days before the big nuclear accident happened.
Which
leads to the debate. Is Mothman possibly an angel or possibly a demon? Is it trying to warn people of oncoming doom, or is it a demon causing doom?
Never heard that before. That's a good question. I never thought about that before.
Which the author I interviewed for my third episode, Brandi Alexander, her book is about spirits, angels helping spirits fight demons, basically. And that's what it's about. It's about a kid who can talk to spirits and ghosts, and basically angels help him and his friends like fight demon uprising, demons trying to break out of hell. I mean, I don't want to give away spoilers about her book on the show because I want people to read it because it's a good book. But but basically, I asked her, I'm like, is there any possibility you could throw Mothman in a book eventually as maybe pick a side for him? Or maybe there's multiple of them. Maybe there's some on each side.
Sure.
Maybe they were a sect of angels that part of them fall Lucifer to hell. Who knows? I mean,
they became fallen angels. Yeah.
I mean, I'm by no means religious. I'm agnostic. I don't believe in anything particularly because I don't see proof of anything, of any one thing. I see proof of a lot of different things from different religions. So that's just my personal opinion. Everybody listens to this show already knows it because I bring it up every episode at some point. But so, yeah, I mean, Mothman has always interested me as well because I still to this day hear people reporting their sightings of Mothman-like creatures in West Virginia, especially, but all around the world. And of course, there have been other flying humanoids spotted at airports in recent years, or spotted while people are on planes, flying humanoid creatures that look like they have jetpacks on them or they have wings.
Oh, yeah. I've seen on a couple of the shows, I've seen them caught on camera.
Which, I mean, the whole flying humanoid with a jetpack thing. The popular theory is that they are time travelers that somehow somehow pulled it back to the future and went to the past. But
I've also heard government experimentations, new equipment and stuff that they could be from that we don't know about.
Well, I mean, basically any cryptid paranormal topic you talk about, there's government experimentations always have a chance to be in there. You never know. You never know what the government's up to because it's just the government does what it wants to do. And none of us will ever know the secrets of the government until the day the world basically ends and someone breaks into the White House to get the Book of Secrets or wherever they keep it. It might not even be in the White House. I don't know. I mean, could be in the Pentagon for all I know or hidden somewhere else. Who knows? I mean, it's just, I would love to get my hands on it, of course. Who wouldn't? But, but all right, let's see. What do you, well, actually, have you ever seen a shadow person?
Yeah, I have. I do a lot of investigations, so you're bound to have one, or you know, eventually have one in an investigation, right?
Yeah, I mean, of course. I mean, if you're investigating spirits and ghosts, then there's always a chance that, or any haunted location, I'll go into this quickly because I do talk about this every episode at some point usually because it comes up, but. The house I bought back in November we live in now we had paranormal investigators come here in December before Christmas because, and basically what they uncovered, what they believe they uncovered, is that the original husband and wife who built this house are still living here.
Oh, okay.
And my girlfriend, Katie, and her sister, Rain, have both supposedly seen shadow people in this house when they're up late at night, like around the witch, which I discussed this. Actually, I never discussed this on this podcast, but I discussed it with other people. With the paranormal investigators, I mainly discussed this theory. I believe, well, my personal belief is that shadow people, I believe once you die, if you're going to be a ghost, if you're going to become a spirit that stays on Earth and haunts or just resides somewhere, I believe there are different stages you go through as you learn to control yourself more. Because I believe when you first die, I believe it's like becoming a baby ghost almost, because you don't know how to control yourself. And that's when people see like little white mist everywhere, like a white mist cloud running around. Like, I think that's the first stage, because you don't know how to control and put your molecules, I guess I'll call them, into a shape. But I believe shadow people is more of a advanced spirit form where they know how to form themselves into something. And it just takes a shadow form, because that's something they know of. And it's easier for them to hide.
I'm sure that there are different people have different views on whether it's their energy is powerful enough or not, or if it's the person, the receiver, that's not able to see them. Because I know from a personal experience in my haunted antique shop that I owned, I could see the full-bodied apparition, and the woman that lived upstairs, she could see the ghost the same way that I could, but her husband was only able to see him as a dark shadow. He knew it was him because of the shape of the shadow, but he couldn't see him as a full-bodied apparition as she and I did. So it could just be the energy or the way the receiver receives it, or our abilities of being able to receive.
Yeah, I mean, which makes sense 100% to me. I mean, that's the only problem with talking about paranormal things, is there's so many variables you could throw in that we never will know answers. We'll never have real answers. Right. If we ever do, it's nowhere near the time where we're going to have the answers yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take us discovering new ways to investigate in the future, and new sciences, new inventions that we don't even, because the world as a whole, which is why my show is called what it is, is because, yes, paranormal is slowly becoming the new normal, because almost anybody you talk to has some kind of paranormal experience, whether it be a slight little thing, or like hearing voices that there's no body for, or it could be big things like actually seeing a Bigfoot or seeing an alien abduction type thing. I mean, it's becoming a new normal now that everybody has experienced it, where 30 years ago, if you talked about aliens or Bigfoot, people thought you were crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's becoming more and more accepted as a whole, and
more widely accepted, for sure. Yeah.
Which, that's why I named my show I Did, and also because it wasn't taken yet. So I grabbed it while I could, and I bought the website, even though I haven't created a website yet. I'm working on that, but I bought the domain name for it, so no one else could take it. But all right. Actually, here, this is one of my favorites, and this was first brought to my attention by the Monsters Among Us podcast, but it's not the only place it's been mentioned. A few other podcasts I've talked about over time, but have you heard of Mirrored Men?
Mirrored Men? No, I have not.
Well, all right. Well, basically, Mirrored Men is a phenomenon where it's usually three humanoid men looking figures dressed exactly the same, a lot of the time wearing suits, and they walk in perfect unison. Every movement one makes, the other ones make the same movement at perfect timing. And basically, people have seen them. A lot of the stories people see in them are outside their bedroom windows late at night if they're looking out in the street or something. Or I've also heard stories of people seeing them in the woods while they're hiking. And basically, what they have in common with aliens, though, is whenever people see them, they lose time. They can lose a couple hours, or there are people who were looking out their window and saw them, and they, when they come to, it's 8 o'clock in the morning.
Mm.
Which, and it's a time loss, which is something commonly reported with UFO sightings and whatnot.
Or abductions.
Yeah, which, so, I mean, the big, that's one of the big topics of it, basically, is, are the Mirrored Men aliens? Are they a Men in Black type government thing where they actually erase your memory so you forget something you're supposed to forget that the government doesn't want you to remember? Or are they, like, who know? I mean, those are the two main theories for them, are Men in Black or aliens. But I like to ask everybody about these because it's one of the newest supernatural phenomenons that people can't explain.
I've never heard about it. Yeah, it's unusual. I've heard of Men in Black, of course.
Well, I mean, everybody has Big Willie out there, but protecting the universe. But yeah, I heard of Men in Black before the movie ever came out, actually, because there was always a little section in every cryptid book I read as a kid about Men in Black. And I've heard a lot of stories, especially on podcasts nowadays, of people telling stories that their grandparents told them back in the 40s or 50s of them seeing something. And then all of a sudden the car will pull up a couple days later and two men in suits will get out and tell them, you better forget what you saw and don't say anything to anybody about it anymore. Otherwise we'll be back.
Oh, okay.
And so I believe that Men in Black, which makes it, I mean, yes, the government recently came out and said they admitted that there are unidentified flying objects, and they don't know what it is. They don't know if it's aliens, or they don't know if it's other countries experimenting on innovative new planes or whatnot. But the government was supposed to come out and tell everything they know back when COVID first started. But since then, did we freeze up again? But yeah, the government basically decided that back when COVID first started, that they were going to start releasing information about UFOs, because they admit it, there are things in the sky. And as the government,
that actually was before COVID. It was during Trump's administration.
Well, COVID started when Trump was in office.
Yeah, but the UFO thing happened before even COVID came. He was already releasing the information about the UFOs before COVID hit.
Yeah, okay, yes. You are right, because I was still working my job at that point before COVID hit, my original job. And I remember hearing that he was going to release stuff, he said he was going to release it, and then COVID started. And then that's when he said, by this date, we are going to release information about UFOs and aliens.
Well, he already did release stuff. You could actually go to the government website. You can actually see everything. I mean, people say, I don't know anything about that, or I didn't hear this, or I didn't hear that. You can go to the government website, and everything that's transpired, and every law, and everything that has been passed, and everything that's going on is right there for you to see it. So, you know, somebody who says, I don't know, just doesn't want to find out. They don't want to investigate or research it to find out. So, but he did. He actually released stuff. I'm sure he meant to do more, but he did release a lot.
I'm going to have to do a Google search then later on, but
Google may not find it for you. You might want to just go right onto the government website. I could see if I could find out who was it that told me. I could probably find out the actual website name for you to go to, that you could actually get all the information. That's how you find out what's a lie and what's not a lie. The fact check, I don't believe the fact checkers at all, because the fact checkers are people they've hired to fact check, and they're going to do and say whatever they want them to. Just go straight to the source and you can find it out, instead of just believing what people say or what you hear or say or what you Google, because Google's very biased too. They're going to just say what they want to say, so you're not going to really find what you want to find.
True. And also, I mean, the government may have released some stuff, but I truly will never believe they release every, because I forget.
Even if the president wanted to, let's just say even President Trump wanted to release it all, they wouldn't let him, I don't think.
No, they wouldn't. They wouldn't let him. And then once Biden took office, you stopped hearing about it completely. Because, of course.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because he had other things on his agenda. So.
But I mean, because there's a classic story. I want to say it was, I forget what president it was, but it was in the 40s, I think, or 50s, or actually, I think it was 60s. But there was a, what is typically called the Norse looking alien that was supposed to be in the White House with one of the presidents, like for weeks at a time. And he actually like went to press conferences with them. And supposedly this president's daughter and granddaughter like met the alien or visitor, whatever you want to call him. And they basically like, it's a, I forget what his name, what the name of the alien was or what they said his name was, but I heard about it first on Parcast extraterrestrial series.
Okay.
Which, oh, it was such an interesting story. And if you go by like the classifications that people have put out for aliens, it was a Norse looking alien because it looked like a white man with blonde hair. But it was a whole thing where he was supposed to be in the White House for like months, and he was helping the president with the Cold War against Russia and everything, supposedly. And like he was trying to broker peace basically between Russia and the United States. Otherwise his people would come down and have to do something about it. Like that's what the story is. I mean, I don't know whether I believe it or not. They were very skeptical about it on the podcast as well, of course, because they have to be. But it was just an interesting story. I mean, whether it's, I mean, if it is true, then the government just basically wiped any existence of that out of the records, or they blacked out the records of that, because something like that would have been released by now, because it's past the point where the government has to hide the records. It's been 50 years now, so I believe they release records after 30 years.
Oh, is that how long it is? It's 30 years?
I want to say 30 years. I could be completely off on that number, but I feel like they just started releasing stuff when I was a kid. I heard about them releasing stuff about the Vietnam War finally. That's why I say 30 years.
But I didn't realize the limitation.
But I know they can't release things for at least 15, 20 years, I believe.
Okay.
Because they don't
kind of makes sense, you know, that you have to have kind of some sort of time frame.
It's like taxes. They tell you to keep your taxes for 5 years, then throw them out, or then burn them, or whatever. Kind of the same theory, I believe. But all right, we'll do one or two more of these. Let's go with something I haven't really talked about in this show yet, but I keep wanting to, but we keep running out of time. Skinwalkers.
Okay, is that a skinwalker, somebody who is almost like a doppelganger for somebody else? Is that what that is?
No, I know the phenomenon you're talking about, which I believe they're just called doppelgangers, but a skinwalker, right. Skinwalkers is from Western American Native Americans, and basically the Ute people, UTE, because I'm sure you heard of Skinwalker Ranch out in Utah. Really? Oh my God. Well, okay. If you ever want to watch a good show that's been on the last few years, and it's not a fictionalized TV show, it's a reality TV show, The Secret of Skinwalker Ranch, because Brandon Fugel is on it, who is someone I'm trying to get on the show. Actually, I believe it's him or a company he works for. They bought Skinwalker Ranch from the government, because Skinwalker Ranch is in Utah. It was originally owned by a family back in the 70s, 60s. And they had all these weird occurrences happen, UFO sightings and dire wolves, or huge wolves that would come onto the property and then walk, and they would take cows or calves and with them. And it was a hub of supernatural phenomenon happening constantly. And basically, eventually, the government bought it to try to do their experiments on it for like throughout the 90s, early 2000s. And then it kind of just sat there because the government couldn't figure anything out. And for the last five years, I think, the company Brandon Fugel works for bought it. And they produced this TV show on, I want to say, Discovery or the Paramount, I think. Actually, yeah, I think it's on Paramount, the channel Yellowstone's on. And it's called The Secret of Skinwalker Ranch. And they basically, on the show, they have footage of UFOs over the ranch. And they have they have shadow people captured on film, basically, and they have recordings of spirits on the ranch and everything else. It's a very interesting show for anybody who's into the paranormal. But Skinwalker Ranch basically is land that was cursed, of course, by Native Americans, because these two Native American tribes were warring over it, and one tribe cursed the other tribe, and when they cursed them, they cursed the magicians or the necromancers of the tribe to become skinwalkers, which basically means they could take animal forms. When it's always been debated whether they're going to switch to one animal, like dogman style or like werewolf style, or if they could switch to multiple animals that they want to, like birds or snakes or whatever. But basically, a skinwalker is a human who takes the form of animals. And there's been stories in recent years on podcasts I've heard that it's like people will see a coyote chasing their car in out west, and then all of a sudden they look back in the rearview mirror again, and it's in human form. Or they see a bird land somewhere, and then they look back again, it's in human form. It's just, it's basically like a changeling. I mean, that's the best way to describe it. It's like a changeling, but it's a changeling that can do it at will. They're not forced to change. They could do it as they please. It's basically, yeah, I mean, I basically just describe what it is kind of the best I can. I mean, it's just, there's not much known about them. I know in a lot of Native American tribes out there to this day, they will not say the word skinwalker because they fear it will bring one upon them.
Wow.
So you've never heard of the word skinwalker?
No, I haven't.
Well, I mean, just... Between Glenn last week and you this week, I'm striking out. I'm striking pretty good here.
I think you know, it depends on what your interests are. Like I'm sure as a podcaster, eventually I'll go and find out about things that I wouldn't normally have heard about. But it's not something I would go and look for. I'm into the paranormal and ghost hunting and. There are other topics that I find very interesting, like reincarnation, near-death experience. And obviously they were interesting to me, so I wrote about them. But I haven't gotten into anything else. I mean, I just told you a little earlier, even the word cryptid was new to me. I was like, what's a cryptid? And I know it has this broad spectrum that it covers, but I never knew it before. I heard about it from when I was interviewing somebody for my podcast. So my research and understanding of things like that is really not extensive. it's very limited at this point.
Well, if you ever want to do something, if you ever try to kill time somewhere, just look up Cryptid Wiki.
Okay.
It's basically like a Wikipedia like site, but it's just, I wouldn't
and
say.
And then it has all listed there. Is that what you're saying? You go to the website and it has them.
It has.
Really?
In alphabetical order, and it'll have cryptids that even I can't pronounce the name of from different parts.
That many of them?
Well, because the ones even that I mainly talk about in this show are mainly American cryptids. Every country has their own cryptids. Japan, China, Asia has full of them. I mean, Africans have tons of them. Every country, I mean, a lot of them are similar around the world, but they just have their own names for them. But there are probably one
probably kind of like Bigfoot and Sasquatch and the different names that they use for it, but they're the same one and the same, but in different arenas around the world.
Right. Like in, I forget what country it is exactly, but
abominable snowman he's been referred to as, but
it's, oh, I hate that term abominable snowman. I prefer Yeti because abominable snowman, people hear Abominable Snowman and they think of the freaking Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer movie. So that's why I don't like that, because Abominable Snowman makes it sound like it's a creature made out of snow or something. So, I mean, I understand why the name started, and of course I respect that and all that, but I actually just read an article recently that they believe there are the Tibetan people think there are six different types of Yetis. Which they,
I think there might be a little bit more than that.
Well, I believe there was more originally, but I think they just proved at least two or three of them, because like one was a species of bear that never was proven to exist until recently. And,
oh, okay.
And another one was a primate that they thought went extinct, but is still in the mountains out there.
Oh, okay.
So
I didn't.
But there's still multiple. And the funny thing is that the different versions of it are different sizes, different builds, different anatomy completely. It's just, I mean, yes, it's all basic Sasquatch looking anatomy, but it's just differences like longer arms, shorter arms.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a lot of differences, and it's fascinating. I mean, it really is. And especially because they tried saying like 10 years ago, oh, the Yeti doesn't exist. Like, I forget who said it, but there was some cryptozoological researcher.
I always have somebody that says it doesn't exist. You know what I mean? You're always going to have somebody that agrees and disagrees and, you know, believes. That's just with anything.
But the biggest thing was, is that this was a well-renowned cryptozoological explorer and discoverer and when he said it, it's like people believed him because he was so well known for being in this field and for.
He would trust his what he says. Is that what you're saying? That they would trust whatever he comes
out with? They would trust him because he's in the field. Like people who believe in cryptids tend to follow like the Lauren Colemans of the world, who are people who have written books and researched this stuff for decades upon decades.
Mm-hmm.
But all right, I think we'll do one more creature and then we might just call it a night, because otherwise we'll never get done, because I can go all night talking about cryptids. But and actually, since we've been sticking to American ones, I'm going to go to one of my favorites that is in Africa. And I want to say, I got to look this up, but I want to say Ethiopia or I'm not even going to try to say where it's from because it just keeps slipping my mind. But they call it over there Makole Mbembe. And I'm sure you haven't heard of it.
Nope. I can ask my South African friend, though. I'm sure she has, but not me.
But basically, what it's supposed to be is like a living dinosaur. There's a lake. I gotta look up where this thing's from. Every week I do this and I'm like, I used to know the country, but there's a lake in this country that's huge. And there have been I don't want to say thousands, but hundreds upon hundreds of reports from African people and from people from America who went over there looking for it, that this is a prehistoric creature living in this lake. And it comes up and it eats once in a while, then it goes back in the water and it goes days without being seen.
Has it been like taken caught on camera and anything like that? Like, or no? Is it kind of like the Loch Ness monster here and there?
I don't think it has been caught on camera at all because, well, it's Africa. And it's not South Africa that's like, you know, built up and civilized. It's middle of the jungle Africa. Which,
yeah, something like that, I'm sure, is prehistoric, and I'm sure there's a possibility that it exists. I mean, I feel that there's a lot of stuff that's in the ocean that we don't even know exists that's there. I mean, every now and again you see them discover a fish they've never seen before or something of that sort. Who's to say that there's not a possibility that it exists, whatever that name is.
That's why I actually, I love the movie The Meg, because I like the theory they put forth in that movie that there is a layer at the bottom of the ocean that we can't cross because of the pressure in it. And that's where all these creatures sometimes escape from. And that's where they've been safe for the last thousands of years, like the megalodon. I truly believe the megalodon could exist still. That's still alive, because I just saw in the other day in the news, they found there's a 22 foot shark, great white shark, that is going up and down the coast of the east coast of the United States. And it was in Massachusetts. That's why I saw it on the coast of Massachusetts. That's why I saw it in my local news. But
but
if there could be a 22 foot great white out there, who's to say there still can't be a megalodon? Because there's definitely, I mean, all these whale carcasses that wash up on shores that have these giant, huge
ships that are missing in the triangle.
See, it, it, so. it always circles back to things, always. But that's the great thing about this world, is you can always circle back to other phenomenon, and one could be an explanation.
A lot of those, they're missing, you know, and they don't know why. So,
well, I mean, that's kind of, I liked how they did that in Kong Skull Island. How John Goodman, how he said, like, I was on that ship as a kid, and that was no wave that took it down. That was, it ends up being Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
I love how the end up being Godzilla, and I mean, yeah, no, I don't think there's really a Godzilla out there in the ocean. That's just too far. But I when I was a kid, in these cryptozoological books I read, there would be always one little section about dinosaur sightings in the middle of South American jungles or in the middle of African jungles. And like the picture that always stuck out in my head was a T-Rex in the middle of a jungle. And like, I don't know if I believe a T-Rex is still around, because I believe someone would have saw that and said something or had video footage of it. It would have been like Jurassic World. It would have been like Jurassic Park 2, but
it might be in the Land of the Lost at the bottom of the volcano.
I mean,
or center of the earth.
That's a whole nother theory that I actually just heard recently something about, I forget where it was, but there was something about the government's protecting Antarctica. And like, if you go to Antarctica.
Yeah, I heard something like that too.
Like, I heard something recently that there's guards, like, from every nation, almost every big nation, like, posted up at Antarctica. Like, the UN has a UN guard there in Antarctica, preventing people from traveling into it. And it makes you wonder why.
Why?
Yeah. And this is probably bullshit completely, but I saw an article on Facebook the other day that popped up, and I didn't even read it because I've seen these articles before, and they're usually like the old papers you can buy at like gas stations, the Inquirer and stuff. But it was like, the title was like, time traveler speaks up and says that in the next month or two the ground will open up and there will be creatures coming out of it. And I read the title and I was just like I was almost gonna share it to the Paranormal the Normal Facebook group, but I was just like, I can't. That's just gonna make my group look ridiculous, because I doubt this article is anything serious. I mean, I have a hard time believing in time travel. I just really do. As much as I wish it existed, like everybody else, so we can go back and fix our past mistakes.
I believe it might be possible.
I truly believe it's possible, but I don't think we discovered the science yet to actually.
I think we have. We just don't know it. We haven't been told about it.
Well, I can believe that. I mean, I can believe that part, that the government figured it out and they just don't want to say yet, like, oh, this is truly possible, because then every Bob and Sally is going to want to be like, all right, I'm going back to high school to fix the freaking mistakes I made as a high school kid. I know I would, but don't do that, you dumbass. Get away from her. But
storm over by you? I thought I saw lightning behind you.
Oh, yeah. It's pouring here.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we had one too earlier.
Yeah, yeah, it's been teasing us all day, but this is the big one.
They had a tornado drop down here in my town too.
New Jersey. New Jersey. Well, yeah, we get tornadoes up here too once in a while. Rarely, but it happens.
Freeze down and stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, we get hurricanes more because we're by the ocean. But New Jersey is too. But I guess it depends where in New Jersey.
Because
mm-hmm. I mean, I'm. Where I live currently is like 2 hours away from the ocean, but
but
I can still smell the ocean in the air sometimes. So it's just, I mean, you know, water cycle and all that science, but so dinosaurs living in the Amazon and dinosaurs living in the African jungle. I can't think of the name of it at the moment, but, or even in the Asian jungles, who knows? I mean, maybe they are coming through these. I mean, I truly do believe what they used in the new Kong and Godzilla verse, the whole Hollow Earth theory. I can believe that. That would almost make sense. Because you have rakes or pale crawlers, as they're called. You have dinosaur sightings, including multiple sightings of pterodactyls over the last 30, 40 years, even further back to the 1800s, there were sightings of pterodactyl-like creatures. Especially out west. I mean, the story of that that sticks out the most to me, and it was on, they did a segment on Monsters and Mysteries in America back on Destination America channel back in the day. And it was basically a 8-9-year-old boy was picked up in his front lawn while playing by a pterodactyl-like creature with multiple parents in the neighborhood witnessing it and trying to shoot at and stop the creature.
What happened to the child?
Eventually the creature dropped it because I think it got shot too many times. And it just said, screw this, I'm out of here. But I'll go in the desert and find an easier meal. But I mean, there's just been so many sightings. I mean, yes, no one's saying, oh, I've seen a Brontosaurus, I've seen a T-Rex, I've seen an Allosaurus. Like, no one's saying that, at least that I've heard of. But I mean, maybe no one's going venturing far enough into the Amazon because there are still huge portions of the Amazon that no human eyes have seen, except for natives. And they're not talking to us. There's still tons of natives that don't talk to other humans.
Yeah. There was a story documentary, I think a couple of years ago, a guy was going over there to try and bring them into this world. And I think he got killed by them. They murdered him.
Yeah. Cause they I don't blame them. Why would they want to be brought into this world? All they have to do is look at Facebook for a day and say, screw this, we're going back to our world. I mean, at least that's the way I think, because the world's becoming a circus.
It's crazy world we live in.
But yeah, I mean, so dinosaurs existing, I'd give it and I actually like doing this scale. I might make this a regular thing, but I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10 on my believability scale.
Exactly what I was going to say. Depending on which dinosaur you're talking about an 8 out of 10.
I just mean dinosaurs overall. I'm not going to start naming different dinosaurs because, yes, if you say a T-Rex still exists, I'm going to probably say, yeah, that's like a 3 out of 10 believability, but okay. But I mean, then again, when I was a kid, I used to have the craziest dreams that a T-Rex was chasing me around the outside of my house and that I'd have to, like, I'd be in my house hiding and the eye would be looking in windows, like, trying to find me. But I think that was right after Jurassic Park came out, so it probably was nightmares based on that. I think that was when the second one came out, and it was the dinosaur in New York City, because I lived so close to New York City, I thought it could happen to me. But I've actually talked about that in this podcast before, but yeah, I mean, dinosaurs existing is just... And for my stepson's sake, because he's a huge dinosaur nut, I hope they do exist so he can see one day.
There you go.
Hopefully from a safe distance and not being chased by one, but we'll see. I'll take a Triceratops or a Brontosaurus, please. No meat eaters. But, and I guess that's where we'll end this night since we are getting close to 2 hours at this point. So,
bye.
I know time flies when you're having fun talking about cryptids.
Yeah.
So, I'll let you take the honors and go first. Where can people find you if they want to hear your stuff or if they want to find out more about you or try to get you on their podcast?
If you'd like to find out more about me, you can go to author, A-U-T-H-O-R, Eleanor, E-L-E-A-N-O-R, Wagner, W-A-G-N-E-R.com, author, Eleanor, Wagner.com. You can find everything there from my books to my podcasts to the footage that we've gotten on investigations. It's all on the website at the different links. Because I have galleries of pictures from the different books. So you can just click on the galleries and go there as well. There's events. You can click on those. If you'd like to reach me, though, you can get me at authoreleanorwagner.com.
Okay, and I will be sure to, I'm actually going to link that into the show notes, of course, so that people can just click on the show notes and go to your website as well. And I am also, as everybody will know by the time this episode drops, I've been dropping teasers of different episodes of your shows, just so that people can get a little preview of who you are before I talk to you. And that way, hopefully, you can get a few more subscribers as well, because that's always a good thing. And as all my guests know, who listen to this show regularly, but for those who don't, you could find me as at Juggalo Bastard on Twitter and Instagram. And yes, that name does derive from my other podcast I'm on called Bracket Bastards, a pop culture bracket/tournament podcast that has a lot of fun that me and my friends do. But feel free to check us out there. I know most of my fans of this show are from that show already. So, but hopefully in the future, it'll work both ways. And you can find me as Jeremy Bryant on Facebook. And you could also find me in the Paranormal The New Normal fan group, which I hope to expand greatly. I've been posting it to every social media to try to get people to join so they can see previews of everybody that's going to be on my show. And so that they, people who are on my show, can feel free to post things on there about new things they're doing so that it's a kind of community. And I thank you for joining us once again, listeners, as we go to the other side and talk about things that are becoming slowly the new normal. And I will see you next week. Check out the Facebook group for a preview of who's going to be on next week.